Well, that's the Navy hymn, Eternal Father, Strong to Save, introducing us here to another episode of Conservative Casual Friday with your show host, Andrew Harrit. And today we want to discuss not perils on the sea, but perhaps political perils in the modern, in the Navy and the wider modern military. Joining us here today is Center for Military Readiness President Elaine Donnelly, where on the show where we like to discuss issues for conservatives and others, current events going on during the week and in our time. So, well, we want to discuss a whole lot of issues of what is happening with the modern military that we'll look forward to under President Joe Biden, what's been going on this last decade, particularly since 2010. We're now going on 10 years since President Barack Obama repealed the what's often been called the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy and open homosexuality in the military. Well, Elaine Donnelly, welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, we had a recent interesting event that came up, the United States Navy's Task Force One Navy, TF1N, created this last July 1st, 2020, came out with a report recently. Among other things, it was noted that the members that had created this report that had some 338 various references to diversity in it had all pledged to advocate for and acknowledge all lived experiences and intersexual identities of every sailor. Well, this really brings to mind, Elena, what's going to happen? What should the military expect from a President Joe Biden administration and its policies on the regulation of the military?
Well, this report, the Task Force One Navy report, which is getting in a lot of heat, a lot of controversy about it, this is the logical progression of what's been going on in the United States Navy for a long time. They've been very much into so-called diversity. Critical race theory is no stranger to the Navy. We're going to be seeing stand-downs to investigate and find out about extremism in the ranks. So when a report like this comes out, it gives the impression that it's only looking at extremism of one stripe, and that would be on the right, the so-called the white supremacists, the racists, the people who would do harm to others for racial reasons. But what you don't hear a lot about are the extremists on the left, and there's no place for extremism on either side of the spectrum in the United States military. But the blinders are on, firmly on. And I'm concerned because when you have this pledge that's part of this Task Force One Navy report, it uses words like, well, they're woke words, things like intersectionality and disparate impact. It's another name for diversity metrics and quotas. And as you said, when people start making accusations against other people, if you're white, that means you're a white racist and or a white supremacist. And if the person on the other side of the room happens to be black and that person is led to believe that, well, my commanding officer or my immediate superior is not minority, therefore that person must be racist, how divisive is that? I mean, there's not much that you could do to divide people more than that because you have to have mutual trust and support for each other. This is a whole different system. It's not recognition of individual merit. It's not non-discrimination. We all support that. This is a whole different strain of political activism, and it's very disturbing to see it taking hold in this administration in all branches of the service.
Well, is there significance of any such sort of racism or right-wing extremism as it's being examined? It came up particularly after the January 6th riot at the Capitol. And bringing in the National Guard, there was talk of, you know, we've got to vet all these National Guard troops. To what extent does any such problem exist? I mean, people often point to, as you've noted in your writing, the 1995 killing of a black couple near Fort Bragg in North Carolina by members of the 82nd Airborne. To what extent is that a problem today?
Well, they really hopped on that issue. They jumped on it at that time, and the new Secretary of Defense was there at the time, and he remembers it, being a minority person himself. And that was the right thing to do. And there have been many reports and actions taken to deal with right-wing extremism, to keep it out of the ranks. However, there's been a peculiar attitude in the military that left-wing extremism seems to have a level of toleration. For instance, the man who shot up all the soldiers at Fort Hood, Nidal Hassan, he was a known jihadist. He was a psychiatrist at Walter Reed. He was substandard. He was abrasive. He called himself a soldier for Allah. That was on his business card. He presented a slide presentation, 50 slides, that descended into madness. And it said that he tried to justify the killing of American soldiers for reasons of the Muslim faith, or not Muslim faith, he said, for Allah. And I would certainly draw a distinction there, because he was talking about an extreme jihadist form of ideology. The red lights were blinking, and the people at Walter Reed knew it. But instead of discharging this dangerous man from the army, they sent him to Fort Hood. He killed 13 adults and one unborn child. And people wondered, well, how did this happen? Well, it turns out the people at Walter Reed, and I'm quoting National Public Radio here, they said they were afraid of dismissing him because they might be accused of being anti-Muslim. And then you had the the chief of staff of the army, who said, well, this was a tragedy, the people being killed at Fort Hood, but we hope that our commitment to diversity will not suffer as a result. I'm paraphrasing. What kind of mindset is that? Well, if you've never heard anything like that before, you would be baffled, but I was not all that surprised, because diversity for certain favored minorities, including the Muslims in that case, this has been very strong in the military for a long time. And it's dangerous. There were other incidents where soldiers were killed by jihadists in the ranks. There was one soldier who threw a grenade into a tent, killed two officers and wounded, I don't know, 10 or 20 in addition to that. We had a Saudi pilot being trained at Pensacola. This was only about a year ago, and he was there representing Saudi Arabia, and he was being trained by our Navy at Pensacola. He shot up a bunch of people. I think he killed two and wounded 10, something like that. Why was he there? Is it because Saudi Arabia is an ally of the United States? There were indications that he was in contact with al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula. But he was allowed to stay, and he shot his colleagues, and people wonder, how did this happen? Well, I'll tell you why these things happen. When you tolerate extremism of one stripe, even as you say you're going to go after the other stripe, it really makes no sense, and it's dangerous.
Well, that's an issue. Yeah, you've known before. of course, there's Hassan Nidal in November 2009 at Fort Hood. Indeed, there's the wrangling over that for a long time, that they were calling it workplace violence, and they still had not given Purple Hearts to the people wounded there by Major Nidal. And you know, he gave that slideshow, and he had slides in it like, you know, Sharia law, and you have the Fimis, the Christians who are subordinate. Has the military taken any steps to counter such a jihadist threat? You have the Hassan Akbar case in Kuwait right before the going into Iraq, and also recently in 2019. You've noted this Cole Bridges case of someone being prosecuted, and of course, then the Saudi Pensacola. What steps has the military taken to stop any such threat?
I'm not aware of any, quite frankly, and I keep looking for signs that the new Secretary of Defense will take an even-handed approach to this problem. I keep looking for something, a sign, a statement, or any indication that we will not tolerate this kind of extremism. The man Cole Bridges that you just mentioned, he joined the Army as recently as 2019. He was working with purported ISIS fighters, and they were planning attacks on New York City targets, such as the 9/11 memorial. And there was a propaganda video that was promoting an ISIS ambush on American troops. So you wonder, well, okay, what are the military academies doing about this? You would think that the war colleges and the military academies, that they would be on the front line of finding out what is going on and what to do about it. Well, do you remember the character Spencer Rapone was his name? They called him the Kami Cadet. The reason they called him that was that he was photographed in his uniform, full dress uniform. He had a red Che Guevara undershirt, a raised fist, and a message, "Communism will win," scrawled inside his cap. So this commie cadet, he was known for vulgar social media attacks on America. They knew who he was. He was mentored by a professor at West Point, a socialist organizer. That professor, his name was Rashid Hossein, he was put on leave, but Spencer Rapone was graduated. He became a second lieutenant. He went to the 10th Mountain Division, and he resigned in June 2018 with a final salute, shall we say, a rude salute at the gate of Fort Drum. And as far as we know, he has not done anything to reimburse the government for the very pricey cost of his West Point education. So what is going on at West Point? They are also teaching, you mentioned critical race theory. One of the first things that President Biden did was sign an executive order reversing the order of President Trump when he said, we will not have critical race theory instruction in any government agency, including Department of Defense. Along comes Biden. He reverses that. He also canceled the 1776 Commission, the one that was chaired by Larry Arnn, to tell American history in a truthful way. So we're going to have CRT ideology being taught in all the military schools, the academies, right down to the elementary level, because the Department of Defense, did you know they run the largest school system in the world? So all those dependents in the DOD schools, they're going to be taught anti-American ideology. This makes no sense. So I went to the West Point leadership, and several times I said, are you teaching also Thomas Sowell, Shelby Steele, or Walter Williams? They take issue with CRT. They would not answer. And there is nothing showing on the curriculum other than CRT ideology. There's no evidence that they are going to take an even-handed approach to these subjects. This is serious stuff. These are not just college campuses. These military academies are training the officers to lead other men in battle. So why would West Point tolerate the so-called commie cadet who would be authorized to lead men into battle when he was an anti-American radical? How does that make any sense? It doesn't make any sense. So the military's got a problem here. But when the events of January 6 occurred, a member of Congress said, well, you know, most of these 25,000 National Guard troops are white male. Most of them probably voted for Donald Trump. Therefore, it might have been that many of the 25,000 supporters of Donald Trump, they're not going to be supportive of the president. He actually questioned their loyalty. This doesn't help. There was also a retired Brigadier General, a man named Thomas Koldis, and he suggested that anybody who thought that what happened on January 6th was a good idea, they should be discharged from the military, but that would mean getting rid of all the Trump supporters. Now, first of all, I can't imagine anybody in the military or anywhere else for that matter thinking that what happened on January 6th was okay. I just can't fathom that. But here you have a distinguished person being interviewed by Fortune magazine, and he used to be in charge of the department at West Point, Behavioral Sciences, the same department that tolerated the commie cadet. So I'm really concerned about where are we going with this, because the service academies are getting into this woke ideology, and who knows where it's all going to end.
Well, yeah, the commie cadet, Spencer Rapone, as you indicated, in 2016, had been pictured. He was showing off his Che Guevara shirt and "Communism will win" written his hat inside his hat. Has there ever been any incident like that at the military academies before? I mean, how does some guy like that get into the military?
Well, that's difficult to find out. But as I mentioned, that there was a professor there who was like-minded, and one of the instructors at West Point wrote a very lengthy description of what he observed because of this professor, and one of his proteges was indeed the commie cadet. That's the kind of thing that you wonder, how does it happen? Education is where you learn things. What was Professor Rashid Hossein, a socialist organizer, what was he teaching the cadets there? The person who was there, I think it was a colonel, or I'm not sure what his rank was. He wrote about what he observed in detail. Undisciplined cadets not following the rules for uniforms and the discipline that's normally required at the service academies. They felt they were different than everybody else. And he issued a report on this. It was very controversial at the time. And those of us who tried to find out from the Army, what are you doing here? And what are you going to do about Spencer Rapone? They didn't answer any inquiries. All we heard about was he was transferred to the 10th Mountain, and then he resigned 2 years later, and there's no indication that the commanding officers at West Point were held accountable, the superintendent. Here they are training a guy who was so unsuited to lead other men into battle, and yet they kept him in there, and they did not discharge him, and apparently he got a free education. So this is not good. And it's been going on for a long time. They also issued a report that kind of slammed anybody who was on the conservative side of the political spectrum. They charged that these people probably are involved with or aligned with or not concerned about white supremacy and those kinds of attitudes. It's going pretty far down the road. And it's not unusual. It's an academic setting. You see this in civilian universities. You do not expect to see it at military academies.
Yeah. In the past, one article I read, I forget who wrote it, made the reference to, like, you know, some people want to make the military into just like, it's just like Yale with guns. Another article I came across in some article, I believe cadets at West Point were referring to some history class there as being this kind of, quote, I hate America class, unquote.
Yes.
What's going on with the professors at the academies? What kind of academic developments are taking place there?
Well, this is why whenever you hear people say there is a military-civilian gap, be very wary, because this phrase, military-civilian gap, has been used for a couple of decades now. What it means is the military should become more like the civilian world. It never goes the other way. So if you have Marines who come back from boot camp with their hair short and they're different from everybody else and they think they're better than anyone else, that's the charge, the allegation, that's part of the military-civilian gap. And we have to, you know, have those Marines brought down to the level of all the rest of the civilians, and they're not any more special than anyone else. Well, I would suggest that a good, trained, disciplined Marine is different from everyone else, not necessarily better, but different. He has chosen, or she has chosen, to defend the country in the United States Marine Corps, and that requires a commitment, putting your life at risk. That's part of the job. So should their status as trained Marines be questioned that they think they're better than anyone else? That's not fair, and it's not helpful to our military.
Yeah, that's indeed. That's an interesting point you made. I hadn't heard that before, that people were suggesting that we should bring Marines down to the level of everyone else. I mean, there is indeed a special commitment of people in the military, Marines and others. Beyond the academies and issues of this kind of political correctness or right-wing extremism, we also have then this issue that's been prominent in recent years, and now Joe Biden's going to make a move on it. He's announced that we're going to have transgendered, or gender dysphoric individuals in the military. They're going to serve in the military.
Right.
Is this a wise decision? What kind of effects will any such policy like that have?
No, it's a very unwise decision. This executive order, the specific one related to the military, was signed a couple of days after the inauguration. A general executive order affecting all institutions was signed on Inauguration Day. Basically, what it says is it buys into the theory, the notion, and it's unscientific, that gender is designated or assigned at birth, and it disregards psychological and biological realities. Science shows that human DNA and chromosomes determine each person's sex, and these characteristics exist long before birth in every cell of a person's body. It makes no sense to say, and if you change your outward appearance, including with surgeries, removing certain healthy body parts. That changes you from a man to a woman or a woman to a man. But what's going to happen now under these executive orders? Everybody in the military, including doctors and nurses, chaplains, people of faith, they're going to have to not only endorse this philosophy, but act accordingly. And there are no conscience clauses that will be allowed. The administration's already made that clear. The Department of Justice put out a paper saying that the Bostock decision does apply beyond employment, that it implies, you know, immigration, housing, the military. We made the case that it did not apply to the military. But the Obama Justice Department, I think it was the first day, they came in and wiped out a memo saying that Bostock did not apply to these other institutions, including the military. So they are being about as extreme as they can get. Now, who gets affected by this? First of all, women. Privacy is an issue. It's a bigger issue in the military than in the civilian world. If you don't like the idea of a biological male sharing your private facilities, and I do mean private, they mention them, showers, bathrooms, sleeping facilities, if you don't like that, that's too bad. And how do we know that? Because under the previous Democrat president, President Obama, they issued a handbook, a guidebook for the military, and it had scenarios. Well, what if a woman doesn't like having to share facilities with a man? The answer was, she'll have to get used to it. That's the answer. So that handbook and all of the corollary policies affecting doctors, nurses, there's no conscience clauses involved, even if you have ethical concerns, no exceptions allowed. This philosophy is anti-woman. It will affect athletics also. We have athletic teams in all branches of the service at every level, Army-Navy games. We know what those are all about. We also have women's athletics at the service academies. And they're going to have to accommodate biological men.
Yeah, this is. I remember Tony Perkins from the Family Research Council was writing about this issue when it came up. I guess under the at the end of the Obama administration, wrote on their Washington Week section that
right.
You know he would never recommend any member of his family joining the military under such a policy, or rather any daughter. You know, he's, of course, a former Marine,
yeah.
And his son is also enlisted. This is just so extreme that you're going to have women showering with indeed men who think they're women. And I mean, I had a personal experience with this in meeting. Perhaps you recall the individual about 10 years ago, Colonel Shore, who was a former Special Forces colonel, veteran, 20 years in the Army. And he had sued the Library of Congress because he had applied for a military analyst position there, a historian position there, and then revealed that he was at the time transitioning, as they say, from male to female. And he spoke when I was at law school. He came and gave a presentation at George Washington University Law School. And he in his presentation, I asked him a question. And he said that he was a transgendered lesbian, which was something I'd never heard before.
It gets complicated, doesn't it? You know, the one issue that they do not mention in the executive order, it's the psychological condition known as gender dysphoria. Now, mental health is a very important issue. It must be very difficult to live a life where you suspect that you are really the opposite sex. That's got to be tough, okay? Anyone with that condition certainly deserves compassion and competent medical care, not one-way care, politicized care, indicating that, well, if you think you might be the opposite sex, well, we're going to help you get to be the opposite sex without any second opinion or any objective medical care. It's going to go in one direction and one direction only. So when Donald Trump came along, he indicated his intent with three tweets that came out that did not make official policy, but he indicated his intent. A six-month study followed. They looked at the record of what happened under Obama when people came out as transgender or sought treatment for gender dysphoria. Turns out there were less than 1,000, but that less than 1,000, 900-something, accounted for 30,000 mental health visits. And their medical costs increased by 300%. Now, that is a significant number because although the people involved are small, it did affect readiness in some units, and they had to divert monies from operational and readiness funds in order to pay for transportation, to get special treatment, all of that sort of thing. They're treating gender dysphoria different from any other psychological condition, like schizophrenia. If you have schizophrenia, you're not eligible to be in the military. But then it's not the same as gender dysphoria. Gender dysphoria has its own lobby. And the Biden administration is saying it doesn't matter. Everybody else is going to have to get used to it. They're going to have special classes to teach them that people can change their biological sex, and that's not true. What Trump did, he did not put in place a ban on transgenders in the military. This is a common misunderstanding. He did not do that. What he did say is that persons with gender dysphoria or who've had treatment for gender dysphoria, if they're not stable for 36 months, they could not be eligible to be in the military. But the ones who came out before during the Biden years, they were grandfathered in. So that's why there are still some who came out under Biden. But if you suffer from gender dysphoria, you're diagnosed as such, then under the Trump policy, then you would not be eligible. And that's no different than any other psychological illness. So what Biden is doing here is they don't even mention gender dysphoria. They really don't care about the troops or people going through this kind of gender confusion. And it's really a shame families are affected by this, husbands and wives and children of parents. When the military comes down and says, well, we're going to give all the treatment and make sure that this person changes their gender, even though they can't change their sex, that doesn't help. The Trump policy said you could be transgender in the military, but you live in the biological sex that you have. And there are people who say that they are transgender, but they present as their real biological sex. So those people are still eligible, but that's not good enough for the transgender lobby.
Oh, I see. So, if you want to be transgender in your own personal life, okay,
the rules do apply even off duty, and mm-hmm. that's a long-standing principle. But when you say that you're stable for 36 months or something, I know it's a little confusing, but this is the position that the American Psychological Association took. Even the advocates say, not everybody suffers from gender dysphoria, even though they say they're transgender. I don't understand it. That's what they say. That's what the Trump policy is based on and what the experts have said. But it's not an across-the-board ban on transgenders as a class. That is not what the Trump policy was all about. It was nuanced, in other words. So, and it had a good chance of being upheld by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court allowed it to go into effect pending all the litigation that's winding its way through the courts. So it had a pretty good basis. It probably would have been upheld, but the Biden administration has come along and just abolished it, and now we're going to go back to the Obama policy.
Oh, I see. So you're saying you could have transgender feelings or tendencies, but as long as you still acted according to your sex, then
right.
That would be... Okay, I see. Right.
That you meet the standards, including dress and other kinds of standards. That way, you're not worried about, you know, extensive time off or what they called real life experience, experimenting, you know, cross-dressing and pretending like you're the opposite sex. The Trump policy doesn't allow that. At least it's not supposed to. However, the Navy, I mentioned early on that the Navy has been way out there on the left side of this issue for a long time. They allowed a man who was self-identified gay to do a cross-dressing drag queen dance on the carrier Ronald Reagan when he was off duty. And you can see the other sailors who are also off duty watching this guy, and he's doing a striptease as a drag queen in the United States Navy. This happened a couple of years ago. It was a big story in Navy Times. They ran the picture and everything. And we questioned that with the Navy, but the Navy they're pretty liberal, believe it or not. And, of course, the Marine Corps comes under the wing of the Navy. So anything the Navy does, the Marine Corps goes along with. And sometimes the Navy the Marine Corps gets out there even before the Navy does. So Obama, he did promote a lot of general officers who are quite liberal in their points of view. Nobody should assume that the military is a conservative institution. it is not, certainly not anymore.
Well, what kind of effect does something like a striptease drag show have on people in the military? Like, what do you know from, how do people react to that, and how does that...
Well, if you look at the pictures of this, they're just kind of looking like, what is this? You know, they didn't hassle the guy or do anything to harm him. And in a way, this brings up a point. They keep saying, the advocates keep saying that the Joint Chiefs who testified before Congress, when asked, said there were no problems with transgenders in the military. They claim that they said there was no effect on unit cohesion. But that is really not quite true. They were not asked about cohesion. They were not asked about the findings, a few of which I mentioned, that were studied and released by the Trump administration. They weren't asked about any of that. They were asked, did anybody hassle, or were there disciplinary issues because of the transgenders? And the answer was no. And that's a tribute to the discipline of our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines, and Coast Guardsmen, and now Space Force. They didn't hassle these people. They didn't make their life miserable. What could they do? They just went on, and, you know, just like the drag queen on the carrier, there was no evidence that anybody tried to interfere with him. But the drag queen on the carrier was not appropriate if we had women doing strip teases on the carrier to show off their sexuality. Would that be tolerated? Of course not. But this man who was gay, he wanted to express his sexuality, and he was allowed to do so. And there was a big spread of pictures in Navy Times, and it was accepted by Navy leadership.
Yeah, I guess the Gipper would not have been proud of that.
No, he wouldn't, but I think we're going to see a lot of this. We're going to see LGBT Equality Month celebrations and lectures. We're going to see mandatory classes teaching people that they should support this lifestyle. And it's going to be very difficult. And it happened under Obama at the end of his administration, but it's being called for a renewal of it again at the beginning of the Biden administration. So this is not good for the armed forces. The Trump policy was not codified. It was in executive order. So the executive order was quickly repealed on a couple of days after the inauguration. And now we're going to see exactly how extreme it's going to become. They may even go further than what was the case under, if they say, well, all you have to say is I'm a man, but I'm actually a woman, and without even getting your gender marker changed, without the bureaucracy approving, all you have to say is I'm the opposite sex, then you would have access to the facilities of the opposite sex. Now, we don't know if they're going to go that far. They're supposed to come out with their regulations in 60 days. So we'll see how far they're going to go with this. But expect the worst, because this is the Biden administration.
Well, thinking of these broader LGBT issues, looking now at a decade since Obama in 2010 repealed what was called the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, what has been the effect of that? What have we had in a decade's worth of experience of developments?
First of all, the repeal in 2010, repealed the 1993 law. It was not Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Congress never voted for Don't Ask, Don't Tell. My organization never supported Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It was a Bill Clinton executive policy. The actual law said that homosexuals were not eligible to be in the armed forces. That's what the law said. And when Congress repealed that law in 2010, they of course, eliminated the executive order, the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy as well. And the anomalies in Don't Ask, Don't Tell really brought down the law. And Barney Frank, remember him, the homosexual congressman a couple of decades back, when the law was passed and Bill Clinton came out with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, he said, don't worry, Don't Ask, Don't Tell will bring down the law. And that's exactly what happened 10 years later. So that's where we are. Now, we predicted at the time several things. We predicted that, and they kept denying it at the time, that there would be same-sex marriage in the military on basis, that there would be benefits extended to same-sex couples. We predicted an increase in numbers of sexual assaults. That has been proven very true, not only among women, but male-on-male assaults have increased We also predicted that there would be assaults on religious liberty and rights of conscience. And that, I mean, that the chaplains and people of faith have been hassled ever since the law was repealed, and that's going to be starting up again. The one thing that has not come about yet is an effect on recruiting and retention because, well, actually there was a problem when the economy was roaring, but in the last year, the recruiting and retention quite often is influenced by the job market. So it's hard to tell. They don't have any exit questions. Why are you leaving? If you are leaving because you don't want to have to perform operations on healthy tissue to, you know, convince somebody that they've just changed their biological sex, if you leave for that reason, nobody knows it because they don't ask. Talk about don't ask, don't tell. That's the policy. So anecdotally, I've heard of people who have avoided the military or left early because they didn't like these policies, but to the extent of them is unknown. We just don't know. Oh, and there was one more prediction we made. We predicted that when they repealed that law that the issue of transgenders would be next, and they denied that. And there was a study done of what the law said and what it would mean, and when they came out with their report, they denied that. And within a few days, well, actually it wasn't a few days, on gay marriage they reversed on that, but the transgender issue came following along a couple of years later, just as we predicted. So everything we predicted came about, unfortunately, and now what was shown to happen under Obama does matter to the present day.
Yeah, I mean, there have been a lot of things, incidents I've noted in the military have been reported on. I mean, for example, the Navy is building in its a new fuel replenishment ship, the USS Harvey Milk, named after, you know, this great gay icon politician in California, who is actually, biographies have revealed, was actually a pederast. You know, you wonder, is that an appropriate name for a ship? Or
that was a bright idea of Ray Mabus. He was the longest-serving Secretary of the Navy. That's one of the few things that secretaries of the departments get to do, and he chose that name. It's highly inappropriate. But that ship is, I'm not sure what stage it's at right now. I doubt very much that President Trump would have continued with that name. But under Biden, we're going to see more of the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, you know, the issues of, I mean, way back when the policy was first repealed, you know, there's this same-sex marriage, if you want to call it that, at the West Point Chapel. I ran across one person at an event who was in the, I guess, the Navy training for a medical corpsman position or something. He talked about he had refused to attend some sort of training indoctrination session that would be like totally pro-LGBT policy, pro-gay policy. You know, there have been incidents like when couples get to leave ships when they come into port from the Navy, that sort of the first recently married couple, I guess it is, gets to leave ship and meet up and there's like a lesbian sailor who kissed her partner in front of the, you know, the assembled families and everyone when the crew was getting off the ship. So I think about all these things of, you know, what are people in the military thinking about all of this promotion of this kind of LGBT stuff?
Well, it's going to be happening, and they will have no option to dissent in any way. One question that's never asked is, how does any of this improve our military? How does it make it stronger? How does it improve morale, discipline, all of these issues? It's never brought up because the purpose of the military and the purpose of these policies is to promote equal opportunity or equity, to make that more important than military readiness. That is where we diverge in our point of view. My organization supports women in the military, of course, high standards, high equal standards, uncompromised standards. These are the kinds of things we say that if there is a conflict, then the needs of the military must come first. What Biden and what the transgender advocates are saying is, no, our demands for equity and our ideology should come first. That reversal of priorities, they're turning it upside down. This has serious consequences for the military. And we're not talking about private industry here. If you have gender diversity metrics and quotas for a certain percentage of people on the news on a local station or even the network, that a certain percentage of them have to be minorities or women or whatever, that doesn't matter because they're you know, it's not a life and death situation. But if you say, well, we're going to have 50% women in infantry battalions, knowing the injury rates are way higher among women than men, and not to mention pregnancy, vacancies, or, you know, leave time, we know this is true. We know this is normal. It's not going to change. And if we say, well, infantry battalions are just going to have to get used to it, get used to losing their personnel at the wrong time, that kind of policy change is going to put our nation in great, great jeopardy. Now, other nations of the world don't do this. Our potential adversaries don't do this. So why are we doing it? Because the military is subject to political forces. General officers are subject to confirmation by Congress. So when someone gets into a range of being promotable, if you want to go from E6 to E7 or you want to go to become a flag or general officer, rear admiral, or go from colonel to brigadier general, that means your promotion has to be approved by Congress. And this is why a lot of people say, well, I'm not going to get out of the lane here. I'm not going to say something that might hurt my career. This is part of the reason. I knew this when I was part of a Pentagon advisory committee called Dakowitz, Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Services. And I used to ask questions. Well, why are you doing this if you know it's going to hurt readiness? And people would come to me after the meeting and say, well, I couldn't say this in front of everybody else because the Navy Times is here. My name would have gotten in the paper, but they would answer my question in private because they knew they couldn't answer my question in public. So when you see this happening over and over again, that's part of the reason I formed my organization in 1993, to stay current on these issues. We write very independently. I call out generals and admirals and tell them when they're doing stupid things on a regular basis. That's my job, and I like to praise them when they do the right thing. But with this caveat, the generals and admirals are subject to political leadership. So President Biden will be responsible for everything that comes out from these executive orders that he has signed, getting rid of critical race theory. He's bringing it back. He's bringing back the transgender policy. He no doubt will push for more women in combat. We don't know what they're going to do on selective service and whether or not women should be registering for selective service. They'll probably go along with that too. How far they're going to go, we don't know, but it's going to be pretty extreme.
Well, you mentioned women. That's also been another issue that came up in the Obama administration, putting them in particular into ground combat units. What's the status on that? What developments have occurred, and how well has that worked out?
Well, here's what happened. In 2012 and 2013, the Pentagon under Leon Panetta, they announced that they were going to have women in combat units, and the Marines wanted to do a study to find out how that would work. So they said, okay, study the issue, and if you have a reason to ask for exceptions, say for the infantry or something like that, you can make that request for exceptions. So the Marines did a 3-year study, including field tests. They found out that the units that were gender mixed did not do well, and that the all-male units exceeded the mixed gender ones 69% of the time. They broke it down in marksmanship, in physical strength, in ability to perform simulated combat jobs. There was no comparison. And these were really strong women. They set out to prove the thesis that men and women were interchangeable. That was the purpose of the test. And what happened was the test proved the opposite. So the Marine Corps Commandant at the time was General Joseph Dunford. He later became Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. But at that time, as the Commandant, he asked for exceptions. And at that time, it was Ashton Carter, who then was the Secretary of Defense. He denied that request. He did it for reasons, as I mentioned before, equal opportunity and equity and that sort of thing. He ignored the data. He ignored the science. He ignored reality, and he just pushed it on through. And the thing that's interesting about this is, to this day, the Marines study, many of the points of data that I just mentioned a few, some of them were leaked to the media at the time. And my organization has preserved that information and made sure that it didn't go down the memory hole, otherwise it would have gone down the memory hole. But the one thing we can't get our hands on is the memo that General Dunford submitted to the Secretary of the Navy at the time. We have a redacted version of it, but the big paragraphs that are blacked out could very well have said, if we have women in the combat arms, people are going to die. We don't know whether he said that or not, but I think we can assume that he did because they won't release that document in the unredacted form. Even Judicial Watch went to court and recently was denied by the court. The Marine Corps refuses to release that information. So if it was a positive report, then what are they concerned about? If it was a negative report, then I think women in the military have a right to know what are they up against. If they are put into units where they're expected to perform like men, even though they don't have the same physical capabilities that men do, if you break it right down, it means women do not have an equal opportunity to survive or to help fellow soldiers survive in direct ground combat. And the definition is important. Direct ground combat means attacking the enemy. That means infantry, special operations forces. It does not mean just being in danger or in a combat zone. Women have served with great courage and distinction in those roles. Nobody questions the courage of women in the military. Nobody, including us. But the units that attack the enemy, that's another story. And that's where physical differences really do matter, and the evidence is overwhelming that women should not be in those direct ground combat positions. But, again, the Biden administration ignored the science. They pushed it through. I should have said Obama-Biden. Now we're going to see an extension of that. Congress has been derelict also. They've not had a hearing on this issue in more than 40 years in the House. In the Senate, not since 1991. And that's not right. They should take this issue seriously. That's the right thing to do for women and men in the military, but they've not been doing that.
Yeah, I found it interesting reading about that a couple of years ago when that came up. I remember coming across some statistic that the average woman is about as strong as a 50-year-old male. And, you know, I'm about 50 years old and thinking, you know, I don't really belong in the infantry. You know.
Yeah, the first time I visited West Point as a member of the Dakowitz, I looked and brought, and I still have it, the scores that were evident. The best woman was equivalent to an older man. That's why they had different standards, gender norm standards, so that women could serve without being forced to compete with men. Now things are different. Now they have what they call gender-neutral standards, and women are open to the combat arms. They can join the combat arms. The problem is the Army's combat fitness test is not working out. It's gender-neutral, and what's happening is the women are failing at very high rates, as high as 83%, and they keep trying to tweak this test, but they can't do it without lowering the standards for the men. Another way of doing it is to jury-rig the scoring system so that women only compete against other women and you're put into percentile bands. This came out only a week ago. And men have their percentile bands. And then when they come up for promotion and you look at, oh, well, here's a high percentile person and here's another high percentile person, you don't know that either one is a man or a woman because they've eliminated names on the application for promotion. That's already happened. So at least on paper, you're going to have a superior woman competing with a superior man, and they may pick the woman even though she is about equivalent to the lower-ranking men in terms of capability. This system is not going to work. It's just, an artificial a contrivance to disguise reality. And it's not going to work. The other day, one of the women who made it through Ranger training, she issued a statement saying, well, don't lower the standards. The ACCFT, the Army's Combat Fitness Test, should remain high for both men and women. Well, that sounds good. The problem is, in Congress, they're saying it's not fair because women can't compete with the men. Well, of course it's not fair. But you can't have it both ways. As long as minimally qualified women can join the combat arms, as long as you say, well, you got to have gender-neutral standards, and then you have these quotas, gender quotas, 25% or so in the Army, this is what's being demanded. If you do, if you can't have gender standards or gender quotas and have high standards at the same time, especially if women are going into the combat arms. It just, so we know the evidence is piling up. Congress hasn't even looked at it yet. They haven't had a hearing on this issue, as I said, for more than 40 years. That is not a tribute to women. All they have hearings on, by the way, is sexual assaults. And the news on sexual assaults is bad. Every year it gets worse, and it's not right. But that's that. Who knows? Maybe women being in the combat positions is making the problem of sexual assault worse, not better, even though the promise was made, oh, we'll put women in the combat arms, and that way the level of respect will increase, and those numbers of assaults will go down. Exactly the opposite happened. And the people who made that promise, they're not being held accountable. They never are.
Yeah, I remember the Family Research Council, my friend Peter Sprigg there, he wrote a research paper back when the whole issue of repealing this open homosexuality policy in the military came up. One key thing he focused on is that evidence indicated that sexual assault would be a major problem with homosexuals, that there was a disproportionate number of homosexual assaults as opposed to heterosexual assaults on the military.
Right. So if you look at our webpage, www.cmrlink, you'll see a very extensive analysis of that problem of sexual assaults. The Pentagon comes out with numbers every 2 years on what they call probability. Actually, they come out with data every year on sexual assaults in general. And when you look at the trend line, it goes up and up and up every year. And there's also a trend line, two more trend lines. One of them is the incidence of false accusations, ones that end up being unsubstantiated. That is a problem as well. And I mentioned before, the sexual assaults that are male on male. So all of those trend lines, if you look at an article on our webpage about military social experiments, are they increasing sexual assaults on men and women? You can see that on our webpage, and the numbers are not encouraging at all. It's a very distressing situation.
Well, you mentioned before, our potential adversaries, China or Russia, you know, they don't do these things. Has there been any sort of noting of among, say, potential adversaries of what's going on with the American military and these social policies, any sort of report or comment from any leader, or for that matter, on the other hand, what's been the experience of our various allies that are often touted as, oh, they have gays, you know, they have transgenders in the military, you know, we should just follow them. What's the sort of foreign response?
Well, are you talking about the advocates of these social policies? Because response is just blame the men. Mm-hmm. They just blame men.
Well, no, I meant yeah, people will point to like the United Kingdom, and you know, we're looking at from 1999. You know, they had imposed by the European Union's court a decision to for example, bring in gays and so forth. If we look at say European countries and so forth, are they now looking at some 20 years or so that they've had these policies? What sort of reaction have they had to any of these developments?
There are some countries, including allies such as Israel, they do have homosexuals in the military. But they don't live in close quarters like the American troops do who are deployed overseas. In Israel, you have a defense of a small territory surrounded by enemies, of course, and they're trying to neutralize the enemies to a certain extent. But in Israel, the situation is really quite different. But on women in combat, they have noticed that when it came to lifting the hatches on the tanks, that the women couldn't do that. They're very heavy. They're very heavy for a reason, because they have to protect the people inside, okay? Very heavy. So they don't use women in the tanks anymore. They patrol a safe border. They do not go into combat situations attacking the enemy. There's a unit in Israel called Carousel, I think. And these are very brave women. Everybody is responsible to defend the country in Israel. Very few exceptions. But that's a different situation than what we have here. They do take their military seriously, and they don't do the social experiments like is being demanded here. Now, Britain has been following the lead of the United States. For many years, they did not have women in combat arms either, and they had good reason. Their scholarship, their research showed that when you have equal standards, it's unfair to women, identical standards. So they had gender fair standards, which were different, to keep the injury rate down. But when the policy changed in the United States in 2015, arbitrarily, Britain, unfortunately, followed the lead of the United States. So now their policy has changed. But in Germany and some of these other countries, they don't use certain troops. They're not deployed overseas. And they certainly, countries like Denmark and the Netherlands, they don't do combat engagements the way the United States does. So we shouldn't be following their lead. They have a policy. They're very liberal in their policies. They have labor unions that represent the military in some of those countries. We don't do that because we have to handle our military differently. So the all-volunteer force, it's all part of it. We have to keep standards high and equal and uncompromised. But people who want to use the military for social experiments, they know everybody in the armed forces, they must follow orders. There is no option to dissent, especially if you want to be promoted. So that's why when the presidency changes hands, in this case, we've seen it in spades, we've seen this president just come right down and say, well, we're going to change everything that Trump did, just like that, overnight, snap the fingers. That's a big mistake. He hasn't considered the consequences of that, but the consequences will become evident. And what we'll do is report on what happens because this too shall change. There will be new presidents in the future. Hopefully some of these policies will be revisited and we'll get more common sense in place than what we're seeing.
Well, do you think that's an interesting question then? Is there any possibility to reverse any of these policies, roll back? What options are there in the future?
Well, again, a president can do a lot with executive orders. The disadvantage is that they can be reversed in the same way. That's what we just saw in the transgender policy. Should things be codified? Yes, they should. I believe there are ways that could be done. A couple of years ago, actually 2013, we recommended something called the Sound Policy for women in the military, and our position was pretty much the same as the Department of Defense. It said that positions should be open to women, with the exception of 11 MOSs at the time, military occupational specialties. And at that time, the Department of Defense and my organization were on the same page. But then they started to go further and eliminate all of those, some would say restrictions, I would say exemptions. And now minimally qualified women can be ordered into those units on an involuntary basis. So anyone who thought that, well, we're going to allow women in combat, they hang on to that word allow as if it's going to be voluntary in every case. Not necessarily. Because if you're ordered, you must do what you're ordered to do. And that's where the problems are going to be starting to arise.
Well, I guess in closing out, you mentioned this phrase, the military-civilian gap. People have always talked that we live in a society now, modern societies like the United States, so few people serve in the military, only the sort of fabled 1% in a military, some 2.1 million members in a country of over 330, some 350 million people. What could be done to close that in society? Is there anything to be done there?
Well, one thing you should not do is teach critical race theory in the schools because it's anti-American. It undermines patriotism. We need to raise our children to love America, to be willing to serve. This is very important. But you can't do it on an involuntary basis, pretending that men and women are identical. If you treat everybody the same, you've got 50-50 men and women called up for registration for selective service, and only a tiny, tiny minority of women are even minimally qualified. If you do that kind of a policy, it looks equal on its face. It would devastate the military because you're going to gum up the system. Just to find those few women who might be qualified, you're going to really have a difficult time. And that's one of the reasons why Selective Service should not go down the road that has been recommended to include women in registration and a possible future draft. That's not helpful to women. It certainly isn't helpful to our military.
All right, then. Well, for our listeners, you've been listening here to another episode of Conservative Casual Friday with your show host, Andrew Herod, where we look at current important events for conservatives and others, and to the Center for Military Readiness President, Elaine Donnelly. Well, Elaine Donnelly, thank you for joining us for the show.
Thank you. And again, our website is www.cmrlink.org. And we've got a wealth of information there. CMR eNotes has all the latest information, and there's feature articles as well, a lot of research that's available for anybody to use.
All right, excellent. Well, join us next time, next Friday, for another episode of Conservative Casual Friday.